The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark.
Glory to you, O Lord.
Jesus took Peter, James, and John and led them up a high mountain apart by themselves, and he was transfigured before them. And his clothes became dazzling white, such as no fuller on earth could bleach them. Then Elijah appeared to them along with Moses, and they were conversing with Jesus. Then Peter said to Jesus in reply, "Rabbi, it is good that we are here. Let us make three tents, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." He hardly knew what to say. They were so terrified. Then a cloud came, casting a shadow over them. From the cloud came a voice, "This is my beloved Son. Listen to him." Suddenly, looking around, they no longer saw anyone but Jesus alone with them. As they were coming down from the mountain, he charged them not to relate what they had seen to anyone except when the Son of Man had risen from the dead. So they kept the matter to themselves, questioning what rising from the dead meant. The Gospel of the Lord. It's such a powerful scene. I don't know. There's something there. This one line. I think it gives us some sense of the experience of Jesus being transfigured, the appearance of Moses and Elijah along with him. Right, when we see Peter. He's eager. Do you know? He's eager, but he steps in it all the time. It's like this is a somewhat comic utterance. I mean, it's one of the best pieces of proof that we have for this, that this incident actually happened, is that Peter looks really silly here, and the early church is not in the habit of passing around stories of Peter seeming silly, except for the stories that they have to repeat because they happened, they were decisively important, and that's just how he acted, you know? So it's like, okay, true to character here, but this line, he hardly knew what to say. They were so terrified. They were so terrified. Can we feel that? Can we feel, as Jesus is transfigured in front of them? I mean, that's a terrifying sight. It's not like they were sit there like, wow, this is like a really kind of warm glow of an experience. You know, I'm really pleased to be here. What, you know, it's like, this means something. Do you know? It's like, they were terrified. Something so out of the ordinary, something they never expected, and yet was the fulfillment of what they had always wanted, and how Jesus was giving them access to that. I mean, it's a powerful scene. And my other point of distraction is here, you know, at the end. I have two points of distraction actually at this mass, because are Moses and Elijah here or no? Are they not here? Okay, just the brother of Moses and Elijah is here. So that's enough distraction for me to think about them. But the third distraction is that, of course, the disciples have no idea what rising from the dead means. What is rising from the dead? But that points us, I think, onwards to the fulfillment of our own Lenten journey, which is perhaps one of the most important reasons why the second Sunday of Lent is always one of the gospel passages on the Transfiguration. They don't know what it means. They don't know what rising from the dead means, but they've got their eyes on it. They don't know what rising from the dead means. They don't know where Jesus is leading them. But they're listening to him and following him all the more attentively in any case. That's what we see. That's what we see in the gospel passage. How is it? I don't know. I don't want to go there. Sorry. You know it's painting by numbers, right? This homily thing. But anyway, there's a lot going on here. What allows the apostles to witness the glory of God shining in and through Jesus as he reveals himself as he is to them on the mountain? I think that they are set up to receive that great spectacular image that made such a profound impression by the journey that they took with Jesus. Now, I used to think that I used to think that climbing the Torn was a real effort, okay? Going up there with my mom, probably. Now, my legs were half as long as they are today, but going up there was a real effort. Mount Tabor, where we think Jesus was transfigured, and if not Mount Tabor, then Mount Hermon, these are real mountains. This is not the Torn, okay? These are real mountains. And for Jesus to lead them up there was a massive effort. Massive effort. And, I imagine that they're going up there without, they didn't pack a lunch. Maybe they did, but I don't know. We don't hear about it yet, so we're not sure. But they go up there, they're probably not taking much with them, because they couldn't. It's too steep a climb. It's too tricky a trail to get up there. What's happening? What is happening all the while that Jesus is leading them up the mountain? Well, there's an anticipation of prayer. Because the mountain, not just in Jewish lore, but I think also in our experience, the mountain is a place of privileged encounter with God. So as the disciples are climbing, they've got to be thinking to themselves, we're going to pray. We're going to pray. What else are they thinking? I don't know. What's the point, Jesus? Why are we doing this right now? Why do we have to climb this hill? Maybe a smaller one or something, right? There's a looking at Jesus, following him, and trusting where he's leading. So not exactly carved paths going up the mountain. And even now, actually, Mount Tabor, there are carved paths going up the mountain, and they're terrifying as well. I mean, maybe that's where the terrifying comes in. It's like, you feel like you're going to go off the mountain. I mean, they say that that's the most prayerful experience in the Holy Land, because everybody on the back of the bus is crying out to God that they will survive the trip. So this is a tough trail, and Jesus is charting his own course there. So they've got their eyes on him. They have to trust him every step of the way. Do you know, it's not just, there's something profound there. It's not simply trusting Jesus as a thought experiment. It's trusting Jesus with your life. It's trusting Jesus the next physical step that you have to take. They're giving themselves over to him. And of course, they're being bound together, right, as that community of the three plus Jesus. Well, I think if you can hear the echoes there, this is another reason why we read this this episode as part of our own Lenten journey in the beginning. It's got prayer. It's got fasting, right? It's got self-denial in it. It's got almsgiving in a sense of it's got going beyond yourself in there. So we pick up our Lenten journey with them as they make their trek up the mountain. And it's having completed that challenging journey that they are made ready to receive the vision of God's glory as man. So what we see in Jesus in the Transfiguration is a full flourishing, glorious human being, embodying in a way that we haven't seen except in his resurrection the glory of God. But it doesn't stay there. as a mountaintop experience. Right? So we, like the apostles, we have to climb with our penances. We have to climb with our observance of the penitential season. We have to climb with prayer, fasting, and almsgiving. And all of those things have to be an act, continuing act, of going beyond ourselves, looking at Jesus, and trusting him, taking the next practical and physical steps with him. But they don't remain there. It's not like, okay, that's a great prize. I'm so thankful for having seen that, and then I'm going to get on with the rest of my life. No. They're there, and now they've got to make their way down with Jesus. And in order to make their way down with Jesus, they have to understand something of what's being revealed to them. And they do precisely because Jesus appearing alongside of Jesus are Moses and Elijah. And we remember Jesus himself talks about Moses and Elijah. He talks about the law and the prophets. When he's asked, what is the greatest commandment in the law? He says, the first is this. You shall love the Lord your God with your whole heart, mind, soul, and strength. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these hang the law and the prophets. Or in another, it's another instance, but another translation is, the law and the prophets are footnotes to these. The whole of the law and the prophets are footnotes to the greatest commandment. Okay, so all my years of theological study are nothing, right? Because all it is love of God and love of neighbor as self. That's all it is. When Moses and Elijah appear with Jesus, what we're made to see is that Jesus is confirmed in the way he must now walk. And that way, indicated by the law and the prophets, is nothing other than the path of love. That's it. I know you have a lot of books on your nightstand, right? I know you have a lot of theological dreams, and maybe you're making your way through the Bible in a year with Father Mike. And if you're not, you might want to pick that up. It's wildly popular. All the stuff. Want to do all the stuff. My friends, it's all about love. It's all about having our hearts and our lives focused on God, loving him with our whole heart, mind, soul, and strength, and loving our neighbor as ourselves. Now, why do the apostles need this scene and this revelation? Because they're now heading to the cross. And between Jesus' transfiguration and his being crucified, God wants them to know that no detail is by chance. No mistake is made by Jesus from the transfiguration to the cross. Now, I'm not saying that he made a mistake outside of it, but I'm saying that he is raising their attention, is he not? He's capturing their imagination. He's got them fixed in close on Jesus. And from that mountaintop experience, down the valley way and all the way to the cross, Jesus is living the life of love that the apostles themselves are called to live. And so that voice from the clouds says, "This is my beloved Son. Listen to him. Listen to him. Don't let any detail pass you by. Don't neglect anything that he draws your attention to. Pay attention to the way that he walks, because you have to walk that way yourself." And that's precisely the story that we live. Even more so for us. Do you know why? You're all baptized, right? If you're not baptized, speak up, because I have to baptize you. Okay, but I'm just going to assume you're all baptized, I guess. Okay, thanks, Mick. I appreciate it. He's like, yes, I am. Yes. Okay, good. You're all baptized. You have the life of Jesus in you. You have the life of Jesus in you. You're compelled to walk his way. You have the life of Jesus in you. This is why we have to listen to him, because he's leading the way. Your life doesn't make sense without him. The way that you go has to be his way. That's the way of love. And he wants to give you instruction in your day-to-day, in the day-to-day existence, right? He wants to give you instruction. He wants to show you. He wants to lead you, guide you. And he wants to give you the power of his own life of love to work in you and work through you, that you can live the impossible way, the way that he pioneered, the way of love. He took the toughest road already. Committed to love, he took the toughest road. He pioneered the way and so made it possible for us. We especially who share in his life. So we can't settle for anything else. And that's what we commit to as we see the glory of God as man in Jesus in the Transfiguration. My friends, that's our glory. That's what we were made for. We cannot settle for second best. But the path that we must walk to get there is love. And so we give ourselves over to Jesus that he might achieve the impossible in us, that he might make possible the impossible in us. And that living totally for him, trusting him and following him, no matter where he leads, we might too, even now, bring the glory of God to life.